You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, our number two is upon us. Yes, our number two is upon us, and who can stop it from happening? No one but God Almighty himself, I tell you. Our times are in his hands. I like to throw in a little bit of Bible here and there, because that's what keeps me going. You may not agree with it. You may not like it. That's fine. Just ignore it. But trust me, it's all true. Friday the 17th of June, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, 2022. Wow, can you believe it? We're halfway to Christmas, and I'm pretty much halfway through the show today. I had a great session with Greg Mabry to kick off today. Later on in the show, I have Jesse Smith beaming in from Houston in Texas. But as for now, my next guest is just limbering up to take the stand. He's doing some stretching exercises. He's doing jumping jacks, and he's working up a sweat, because it's going to be quite a session. But before I usher him to take the stand, I want to look at some some news that's making the news, funnily enough, in the UK. And strangely enough, it seems to be dominated by one thing. What is it, you may be asking, Rick? What's dominating the news? Well, it's not COVID, and it's not vaccines, and it's not climate change. It's not politics. One word, Gatwick. Yes, Gatwick. What's that? Gatwick's a big airport in London, and Gatwick is a proverbial hub of activity and scandal over today and yesterday. I'm going to just give you some examples of the headlines that are coming out concerning Gatwick. Number one, Gatwick, passenger with restricted mobility, dies leaving his flight. Number two, Gatwick cuts summer flights after staff shortages. Apparently, they're going to cancel 8,000 flights this summer. So if you've booked a holiday and you're flying out of Gatwick, you might want to double check with your provider before you lug all the way down to London and join the 8 to 10 hour queues, only to be told by security that you ain't going anywhere to get yourself back up to your own house again. And obviously you'll have driven up and down in your car and been out a small fortune in fuel. Probably cost you 300 quid driving up and down to Gatwick before your flights are cancelled. You know, you gotta laugh. If you don't laugh, you cry. Sky News, Gatwick cuts summer flights as Heathrow boss warns it could take 18 months to fix staffing issues. If he's predicting 18 months, that probably means 3 years. All right. Call me an old cynic. You know me. I'm an old cynic. But I'm based in reality. Okay. If the Heathrow Gatwick boss says it's going to take 18 months to fix their disaster, it's going to take 3 years minimum to fix staffing issues. What else is happening? Suspected Russian spy arrested. Guess where he was arrested? Guess what airport he was arrested at? Come on, have a guess. Yes, Gatwick. So Russian spies are flying into Gatwick, but UK citizens aren't able to fly out. It's very strange, isn't it? Gatwick reduces summer capacity to prevent repeat of Jubilee chaos. Gatwick denies blaming staff shortages for passengers disembarking dying while disembarking from a plane. Man arrested on suspicion. Gatwick. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. I'm not telling people what to do. I don't tell people what to do. I just simply suggest things. Let me make a suggestion to you people. If you're thinking about leaving the country this summer and buying a holiday abroad, if you really must do it, do it. But balance out the price, the stress, the aggravation, and the ongoing economic meltdown, and say, that family holiday that's going to cost me $3,000-$4,000 to sit on a plane full of drunken louts and lie on a beach that's packed, horrible, and eat dodgy food, drink nasty, flat, warm beer, and then do it all the way home and then come back to my office job that I hate, feeling super depressed. Is it worth $4,000? What could I do with that $4,000 or $3,000 or even $2,000? Could I buy oil with it? Could I buy food with it? Could I put some aside for a proverbial rainy day? Think about it before you jump in. And it doesn't matter if your family are all going away and your neighbors are asking, where have you been for holiday? And you say, oh, I'm not taking a holiday. And you feel like you're some kind of a failure as a human being. Don't follow the crowd. Do you know why? Because you know where the crowd's going? They're running like lemmings off the edge of the cliff. Do you want to be a lemming listener? Do you want to be literally a lemming? I hope not. So think twice before you squander vast amounts of money doing something that's maybe not absolutely essential. But you can take that or leave it as advice. Oh, yes, it's Friday. Yeah. We're going to take a swift, like really swift break, and we'll be right back on TNT Radio.
The stories that matter to you.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jonathan Weissman is in the house, and you know what he's doing? He's scribbling furiously. I think he's got a pen and a piece of paper, and his head's been down and he's been writing furiously for the last 5 minutes. He doesn't normally do that. I notice things about my guests. Also notice he's moved his camera a little bit to his right. Am I correct?
You're very attentive, Rick. I'll give you that. I think you're right on both points.
I am. I'm not very smart. I can't add, you know, letters, you know, A plus B. I can't do that stuff like you. You're maths whiz. I can't program stuff, right? I can't even change a plug, but I notice stuff. I notice stuff, and I'm noticing it.
It sounds like we're on the same wavelength, because I think I heard you in the news section advocating that holidaymakers conduct a risk-benefit analysis on their plans. So as somebody from the cybersecurity space who's been trying to sound the alarm that everyone individually needs to do this with respect to these novel treatments, and I did see your tweet, by the way, where you said, and I did retweet it, avoiding the government's mandated health advice could literally save your life. So taking personal responsibility, conducting your own risk assessments, contrary to what others think, it is cool and it might save your summer and it might even save your life. So I'm with you on that 100%.
Well, I'm glad that we're singing off the same hymn sheet. And by the way, if you're not aware of who Jonathan is, and again, if you're not, shame on you. He's been coming on here now periodically for months. So if you're a regular, a so-called diehard, a real advocate of TNT Radio, you should be familiar by now of who my regulars are. Jonathan has a website at alltherisks.com. He is also on Twitter at alltherisks.com. And, you know, we have things to talk about today. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. You've been... Well, I won't say jetting around the world. You've been over to Scotland. You kind of have been jetting around the world. You know, adding to the carbon footprint of the world. You've been contributing to our demise, Jonathan. Over in Motherwell, I think it was, unless I'm mistaken, you had a conference over in Motherwell. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the FDA's decision to approve Pfizer and Moderna jabs. We're going to talk about strangely increasing media coverage of vaccine injuries and getting a few dissenting voices on there onto mainstream media, which is encouraging to see too. So with your permission, we will run to that agenda at least, and maybe we'll deviate off it a little bit, but we'll see how we go with that. Is that acceptable to you, sir?
It sounds great to me. I'm looking forward to this one, absolutely.
Right. Well, let's cut straight to the chase. Okay. This conference in Motherwell, we talked about it last time that you were on, which was about 2 weeks ago. You were going over there with another, I think you had somebody from, what is that? David Clues. Was he at that? Or was he one of the?
Yeah. Unity News Network. Yeah. He's from Scotland. So we met with him. That's right. Yep.
Brilliant. And there were other people there. How did the conference go? Was it what you expected it to be? Can people catch up with it retrospectively on uploads on YouTube or channels? Give us the down low.
Absolutely. First thing, thanks very much for the introduction to the conference. It went really, really well. We had David Scott from UK Column News gave a fascinating talk really on the media and really just before COVID with many of these kind of scandals and these things that are hidden from the public's view with regards to corruption and lack of justice in our institutions. And I thought that was a fantastic talk. We had David Clues, Unity News Network. We had Graham Crawford from The Light newspaper, Pastor John William Nobles from Grace Baptist Church, and myself going on about the risks of the so-called vaccines. It went really, really well. For anyone who'd like to catch up on the content, we're releasing them. I think it's every day. So John William Nobles' talk was released last night. website is healthandtruth.org, healthandtruth.org. And then you can find the links to YouTube and all the other video platforms. Now, last time my video did stay up from YouTube. This time I went in a little bit further detail on, you know, spike as a bioweapon and the gain of function research and so forth. So here's hoping that they don't take it down from YouTube. If they do, it'll be on the other video platform sites.
So basically, the hub that people go to access all the talks with all the speakers and all the content on all the platforms, the hub for that is healthandtruth.org. Is that correct? So that's the main website where people can use as a launch pad to go into individual talks in the background, etc.
Exactly. It will have all the video links because everyone knows you really have to insure yourself against the censors these days. So all the content, I think, is on like Rumble, Odyssey, you name it, it'll be there. YouTube, we do have the channel, but you never know what will happen to it. I think we've had a couple of, you know, warning strikes and things. So I just mentioned that.
Yeah. YouTube, I think, is, you know, is skating on thin ice in terms of there's a spectrum of censorship. I think you have YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Really, they're really hardcore censorship. You know, Twitter is bad, but it could be worse. You know, Telegram is better. And, you know, there's other channels and platforms they say are better still. But the bottom line is you're going to maybe get hit somewhere by someone, but, you know, you be prepared to lose a YouTube channel, be prepared to lose an Instagram feed. But at least here, and because you have your own website, healthandtruth.org, they can't really do anything about that. So there'll at least be a legacy of the content available for everyone to access.
Absolutely. And if I can, maybe just to try and, you know, whet the appetite, I think my talk may be released probably tonight. I really took the problem of what the summit theme was about, which was media manipulation and control. So I investigated four claims that our media have been making about the mRNA vaccines being safe and the spike protein being harmless, the clinical trials being transparent so that the manufacturers couldn't hide any data, and also that everyone should be vaccinated and boosted now, which was the claim the NHS had been making consistently throughout the rollout. If I can just give one hint of a story that I tell, because I think telling a story, putting a name to a face always helps to bring it home. When it comes to the clinical trials, I tell the story of, you might remember last time I told the story of Maddie de Garay, which was a 12-year-old girl, perfectly healthy, ends up in a wheelchair in Pfizer's trial with a nasogastric tube. Her injury still persists to today. And the regulators, for example, the EMA, claim her injuries are resolving. And Pfizer say none of the adverse events or the serious ones, which typically would require hospitalization, were vaccine induced. There's actually another case study that I brought out. This time I was made aware of through Dr. David Healy. This individual is Augusto Rue from Argentina. In his case, he was 35 years old, a lawyer. He had pericarditis. So he had a lamina pericardial effusion. And what that means is excess fluid in the pericardium, which is a fluid-filled sac, but it shouldn't have too much fluid in it. This occurred a couple of days after he was admitted to hospital. They detected it through a CT scan. Now, what happened is the trial doesn't record his pericarditis. In the most recent documents that Pfizer released a month or so ago, we can find his patient number, and you see a log of suspected COVID-19 illness and anxiety. Very interesting. No record of pericarditis. What this lawyer did, remember, he's from the legal world, he had to sue. It took him over a year. He got both his raw clinical trial records and his medical notes from the hospital where he got his discharge notes, which proved with the CT scan, which he's also got, that he suffered pericarditis. This is completely missing from Pfizer's trial and what they report to the regulators. This, along with the incident with Maddie de Garay, is, in my opinion, concrete proof that when you look at Pfizer's data and you say, this is telling me a bad story, there are serious adverse events, the efficacy is not what it's cracked up to be, the clinical disease endpoint, symptomatic COVID-19, run at a central laboratory where we have no idea what the thresholds are, no idea whether it stops transmission because they didn't propagate the virus in a biosafety lab level 3. When you see these things, you know the real picture is worse because of these case studies. And that's really the point that I tried to drive home. So for those interested, yes, please check out, I think it'll be released tonight, healthandtruth.org.
Brilliant. Well, it's the header for that talk, really, media manipulation and control, especially around, you know, the fallout that's now really beginning to become apparent are the injuries that simply cannot be hid. There's too many people coming forward now, and I believe it's it hasn't really started proper yet. It's just we're starting to see the beginnings of the cracks appearing in the walls and in the House of Cards, the first few of film, but when they fall, it will be a big house of cards indeed. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but this is very up to date. But there was a Scottish member of parliament staying on the Scotland theme, actually. I put up a few damning posts about him yesterday. There are two gentlemen that I've had on the show that have been really badly vaccine injured. One is John Watt and the other one is Alex Mitchell. From both of them are Scotsmen. And they are obviously trying to raise awareness for this. And they have a group together about vaccine injured people. And they've had a campaign this week, Let's Talk About It, hashtag, very, very impactful on social media. Yesterday, John Mason, I don't know if you know about this or not, John Mason actually put up a tweet mocking them. Yes, and it's still up on social media, by the way. You can check him out. And listener, check him out and give him hell at John Mason, MSP, on Twitter. And I'll give you an example of what he said. Someone put up a post about, you politicians will have to deal with the fallout. Good luck. Many people have warned you. You didn't listen. You made your bed, now lie in it. His answer, Jonathan, was more than happy if someone takes us to court. But so far they haven't. I wonder why not. Because their case is so weak. And then multiple laughing emojis. On a thread of vaccine injured people, you have an MSP on there talking about this. He didn't stop, by the way. They say when someone's digging a grave, when you're digging a grave, you should really stop digging or someone should take the shovel from you. He went on to say later on, no one is laughing at victims, but clearly there has been an exaggeration about injuries. Most side effects are very minor. COVID committee has been looking at the problem of misinformation and disinformation, but the courts can look at the real facts if anyone dares to go there. What kind of rhetoric is that coming from an elected member of parliament?
Well, at the very best and kindest way I can put it, he's deeply misinformed. I would refer this MSP to the VAERS disclaimer, which, VAERS is the American vaccine adverse event reporting system, so people can report into it. Although we hear all the time about the impositions that are put on both the physicians, the doctors, and the individuals, the system crashing, reports being removed, and so forth. Even these kind of systems, there's a disclaimer on there saying about the underreporting factor. So these kind of systems, because they require you to take an active step, and in this case, they seem to be facing some sort of gremlins in the system and technical bugs. And obviously all this messaging telling people the vaccines are safe and effective, so people don't put two and two together, don't make the link, don't report it. These kind of events are underreported. Anecdotally, I can confirm from, for example, ministers I know who may know, hundreds or even a couple of thousands of people in their parish or in their village.
Yeah.
More often than not, individuals who are suffering from vaccine-induced injuries are under some kind of spell where they do not put two and two together. They do not even believe it's the vaccine, much less are they going to report it. The same kind of hypnosis clearly exists amongst the medical world for reasons that are pretty well understood. Secondly, as well, I would refer this MSP, for example, to the work of Dr. Buchart, who's a pathologist from Germany. He looked at, and this is in my talk, which is coming out obviously soon, he looked at 15 cases of death shortly after vaccination, where the families wanted him to do an autopsy. And I think in 7 of these cases, and none of these were by the local health authorities thought to be related to vaccination, but 7 of them he found to be very probably or probably related to the vaccine. He saw T-cell infiltration of otherwise what should have been healthy tissue. So this is a fatal autoimmune attack. The body is attacking itself. He sees the same thing in the inner lining of the blood vessels, the endothelial cells. This is an underreporting factor that's very significant because all 15 of these cases were thought to be completely unrelated according to the public health authorities in Germany. Only one of them did he confirm there was no evidence that it was related. So 14 of 15, there was some evidence. I think 7 of them, he found there was good reason to believe it was related. So with these kind of thoughts in mind, underreporting is actually where we're at right now, not the other way around.
You know, and plus, let me add as well, what we're actually seeing reported on the VAR system, the yellow card system, the figures that are there are obviously real cases and real reports, but how many more? It's almost like a tip of an iceberg because of reasons that you've said, people, they're maybe hypnotized or they're completely brainwashed and the disconnecting that the fact that they have taken this injection may actually be the result, or their sicknesses and illnesses or death of family members may be the result of this. And they either don't want to come forward because of, you know, social pressure. You're talking out about the vaccine. Everybody else has had it. We're all fine. So you don't want to look like some kind of a loon, or you simply don't want to admit to yourself that you've been had and that these people that have been saying all along that you need to really proceed with caution and do your own risk-benefit analysis and make sure you get informed consent. They haven't done it, so they're just saying, I'm going to keep quiet about this. So I think there's a massive underreporting in the figures that are actually out there. And the figures that are actually out there are highly disturbing to begin with. It's the old house of cards, Jonathan, and I think it's going to come down. Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to look at some of the authorizations that are being wung through at the minute, which, again, you talk about detachment from reality and you talk about mind-boggling. The authorization of these products to children now, to six-month-old, to four-year-old, and six-month-old, to five-year-old children in America, beggars belief. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 minutes here on TNT Radio. Don't go away. We've got lots more to come.
Misty Winston on TNT Radio.
Now, listen, as an activist who has been thoroughly engaged in the case against Julian Assange, that makes me happy and excited, but also please maintain vigilance. This does not, listen, nothing about this case has been legal or just or fair or reasonable or rational or logical. So I've been saying for ages that this case should have been thrown out and lit on fire. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen. So El País did report that proving the U.S. intelligence services learned about Assange's defense strategy by spying on his lawyers could annul the extradition by questioning the illegal methods used by the U.S. to get Assange tried there, according to legal sources. Many legal sources have been speaking out over the past couple of days since this ruling was handed out for Jennifer Robinson, but we need to keep the pressure up. We need to maintain hypervigilance. We really are in crunch time.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
For sale. One deep fat fryer. One industrial fridge freezer. One set of knives. Cleaver missing. Several hundred plastic forks. One dishwasher. Mid-30s. Has own teeth. All is new. One careless owner.
Poor hygiene is bad for your business. Fortunately, the Food Standards Agency has a range of tools that can help you manage food hygiene and keep your customers. Visit food.gov.uk/goodbusiness.
Hi, I'm Charlize Theron with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Almost all the puppies for sale at your local mall were churned out by breeding facilities called puppy mills.
Constant confinement drives the dogs mad. They are impregnated continually until they can no longer produce a litter.
If you choose a dog from the mall, a dog you could have saved from the pound will die.
Contact PETA to learn how you can make a difference at 757-622-PETA or visit PETA.org.
So, you support green energy?
Ask yourself this.
How many native birds were killed by wind turbines today? Protect humanity and stop the green madness. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Stop the green madness, stop the COVID madness, stop the injection madness, stop the monkeypox madness, stop the financial madness. What madness is there not to stop? It's quite stunning. We're talking Moderna now. We're going to talk Moderna and Pfizer approval by the FDA for vulnerable, defenseless, innocent children. Before we do that, delays. I want to look at delays. We talked earlier on about delays in Gatwick Airport, or at least I did. Delays in the onset of symptoms. Is there not a massive danger right now, in your humble opinion, Jonathan, that people have came forward and done what they believe to be the right thing to do? And they're saying, well, you know, I'm fine. No big deal. A bit of a sore arm. had a little bit of a headache, a little bit of a flu-like symptom for a day or two, but I'm fine. I'm fine. Is there not an element of naivety to think that, you know, the onset of something, and of course some people are dying immediately after being jabbed, assaulted, should I say, chemically assaulted by doctors. They're dying straight away. Some of them are having horrible adverse reactions almost immediately. Other people seem to be getting off, you know, they seem to have dodged the proverbial pharmaceutical bullet. But as I believe Dolores Cahill said 2 years ago, that when these things were talked about or being developed, she said, you know, it's only a matter of time. If you have this put into your body, unless it's a placebo or a, you know, a really super low dose of it, and you only get one shot, maybe you'll be okay. But sooner or later, this is going to take its toll on everybody. Is that a realistic assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, once you understand the pathologies associated with the spike protein and how it's really been supercharged through these vaccines, my view, not everyone holds this. I believe SARS-CoV-2, the virus, is a real bioweapon, but it's a more inefficient vector to deliver the bioengineered toxin, which is the spike protein. The lipid nanoparticle overcomes those hurdles. It systemically distributes. The mod RNA persists. We know that in the lymph nodes, for example, because of the Rolkin study in cell. So it's the more effective way of delivering a toxin to you. Setting the bar to, I haven't been killed by this thing yet, or maybe I haven't been debilitated, hospitalized, or paralyzed, is not a very good bar for a prophylactic treatment that's administered to a healthy population, which is what we're doing here. Vaccine safety is always going to be more controversial because you suggest it to babies, small children, healthy young people, healthy adults, not to people who are clinically already in great need of a treatment. It's much more theoretical. This is why the risk-benefit analysis of all vaccines and all therapeutics that are given prophylactically prior to the onset of the disease, prior to engagement with the pathogen, i.e. the virus or bacteria, whatever you want to say, is much more controversial. In terms of the variability, we know why it may vary. You look at the acceptance criteria, for example, it's very fast and loose. This is the, and I cover this in my talk, RAI, who's the Italian broadcaster, public broadcaster like the BBC in the UK, they leaked the advance purchase agreement between Pfizer and the European Commission. It shows that the dose can vary quite a lot within the acceptable range for it to be accepted. It's 26% either side of the mean. Also, in terms of how much of the RNA has integrity, it's 50%. So it's not like everyone's getting exactly the same product. The manufacturing process does deviate depending upon which site manufactured it. And when they manufactured it, they did try to put in improvements to give you a product with more integrity. Then you've got issues around errors. And again, I talk about this in my talk. This substitution of the uridine, which is what you would find in natural messenger RNA, which is how they've been marketed, mRNA vaccines. No. Go to all the documentation of Pfizer, nucleoside modified mRNA. I call it mod RNA. Because of this substitution and because of the codon optimization I spoke about previously, you're going to have more persistent mRNA or mod RNA, and you also increase the error rate. That they've done studies, when you introduce that substitution into the uridine and you substitute it, it doubled the error rate in vitro. So this is in the lab, converting from double-stranded DNA to single-stranded RNA, double error rate. Now, when your cells are synthesizing this protein, which is already more likely to contain errors, you're doing it really, really, maybe 100 times faster because they've codon optimized it. So what that means is they're not changing the amino acid. They're not changing the finished protein, but it does make you produce it faster. When you do work faster, what do? With anything, you make more errors. Also, it changes the folding of it. And then you come into the world of the amyloids, which is a big thing right now because of these, not blood clots, but fibrous structures that we're seeing from the embalmers. So anyone who thinks, because they haven't clinically suffered, they're not at risk, or they could be at risk from a subsequent shot, doesn't understand the fact that each shot is different. I mean, that's not a conspiracy. That's down to variation in the manufacturing process, even down to how much of it has degraded. How long has your lipid nanoparticle formulation been out the fridge for? I think it can be out for up to 6 hours out the fridge. That will make a huge difference. Just like there's variation in terms of where it gets administered to, right? You know, if somebody accidentally injects into your blood vessel, it's obviously going to have a much more devastating effect than if it goes into the muscle. So there's always variation. But the subclinical damage and what we're seeing now with these amyloids, right? This protein structures that are being created that are long, that are killing people, they could be there as well in those who haven't yet clinically presented. But if you keep taking these shots, the probability that you will suffer a serious, severe, or fatal reaction will increase.
Yeah, that's something, I mean, sadly. And I mean, like, through no, everyone's different. And some people got these shots because they genuinely bought into what they were told by the government about the death rates, or you need to get this done, or you're going to risk your life and your family's lives, etc. Some people got the shots because they had to get them so they could get keep their job, put a roof over their head. They were coerced and bullied. Other people did it because they wanted to go on holidays or visit relatives in another country. And again, they had no real choice, especially when they were trying to visit maybe sick relatives or go to a funeral or do whatever. Other people just went along with it. Other people refused. So no judgment there. But if I could say one thing for anyone that's listening, whether you've had a jab or whether you haven't, or you've had one, you've maybe had two, you've maybe even had three, please, before you get any more or you consider getting one, do your due diligence, do your own research, make sure you get full informed consent. And if after all that, you still want to go ahead with it, you know, who are we to stop you? It's like smoking. I don't recommend anyone smokes, but if you really want to do it, get yourself up to the newsagent, spend who knows how much on a pack of cigarettes that has warning smoking kills and causes lung cancer in the back. And if you really want to partake after that, do it. I'm not judging you, but I'm just saying, you know, you're doing it with your eyes open at least. It's the same thing with these vaccines and they're products. And I liken it to asbestosis a little bit. If you're working in asbestos removal, you know, you got to wear like pretty much a hazmat suit and sealed face mask. Why? Because if you breathe in asbestos fibers, it can cause asbestosis. Well, what happens if I go into a house today and start breathing in asbestos? Am I going to get asbestosis tomorrow? No, of course not. They have to lodge in your lungs and they have to, you know, form cancer cells and things have to develop over a period of time. But you can bet your ass if I'm working unprotected, you know, for 6 months, I'll be fine. You know, I won't really have a problem, but I'll have a problem down the line, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now. And the same thing's happening with people. There are things literally happening inside that they're not aware of until they reach that crisis point. It's like when you take a stroke, you take a heart attack, a myocardial infarction, you know, a little blood clot forms and it hits the coronary arteries that supply your own blood with oxygen and bang, just like that, it's down you go. Same with a stroke, okay? Your blood clot breaks off, lodges into the blood vessels in your brain. The brain is affected. Does that happen instantly? Yes, the event happens instantly, but the build-up to the event happens over a period of time. So potentially, and I mean, it's not just for vaccines. I mean, I'm trying to clean up my eating. I'm trying to clean up my health a little bit because I'm a ticking time bomb too, by the way, for type 2 diabetes and heart disease, you know, too many late night sugary snacks. I'm endangering myself. So don't think this is just anti-vaccine, anti-this. No, we need to get healthy. We need to get healthy, period. Is that fair enough?
We need to take responsibility for our health. And I think this goes especially now. So if you've taken the vaccine, if you followed the public health advice, you thought it was the best thing to do, the government and potentially even conventional doctors, I'm hearing this a lot, are not always giving much help. They're not always even showing as much interest as you would expect. Hence why you see all this obstruction when it comes to accessing vaccine payment from the vaccine damage scheme, for example, because it's bad PR for the government, for the vaccines, for the pharmaceuticals, etc. Same thing with the doctors. The doctors have personally been promoting this stuff, the vast majority of them. It's easier for them to perhaps not accept the fact that there's a causal link, because nobody wants to be that guy in the medical world who makes that link, because they always become a kind of pariah and a figure of ridicule and so forth. I say that to say that if you're in that position, my best advice would be to conduct your own research and to take it quite seriously. I'm afraid the situation we're in is we have now the total breakdown in trust between the population and the government, the public health system, and the pharmaceuticals. For some people, this is nothing new. Like some people who've got vaccine damaged children from a childhood vaccine, they've been fighting this thing for years. So it's not really anything new to them. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of us, this is the first time we've really taken a magnifying glass to this whole thing. And we're realizing, okay, wait a second, I need to do my due diligence. And what I'm saying is when it comes to treatment, when it comes to remedying, for example, spike protein, vaccine-induced damage, I think one good site I can recommend is reactc19.org. I think I got that right. It's the REACT group. They help with people who have suffered from long COVID, so post-infection sequelae, but also from vaccine damage as well. I think Brianne Dresson, who was damaged with some kind of neurological problem following the AstraZeneca trial in America, she often speaks about it. I think it's part of a group she works quite closely with. She's been very outspoken. So REACT-C19 is a good group. They have some good protocols. I would recommend them as a starting point.
Yeah, so if you're listening, that's reactc19.org. And also another plug for your conference site, which was healthandtruth.org. Jonathan's talk that he gave over in Motherwell on media manipulation and control and various other things will be hopefully uploaded to that site tonight, healthandtruth.org. And that website, by the way, is a springboard that will take you to the various streaming platforms, the various guests that were there, and the various topics that were covered. So that's your starting point for that, which I would encourage you to go to. I'm going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, actually, we're going to dig into this FDA approval, because it is significant, and for all the wrong reasons, it's significant for children through Pfizer and Moderna. We'll be doing that when we come back after the break on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
Then the counter argument, well, it's a bioweapon, but it was very mild. Well, that's an incredibly useless bioweapon. Well, what was the purpose of making a mild bioweapon? Well, it's to instill fear. Okay, but you don't need to have a mild bioweapon to do that because it's invisible. Just tell people, like perhaps COVID, or perhaps monkeypox, or as my next guest is going to talk about, perhaps AIDS. It's a very difficult scenario when you're dealing with something that is invisible. And you don't actually have to have anything because nobody will ever know. We don't have technology in front of us to look and see what's going on. If it's symptoms that can be seen across all sorts of other illnesses, you know, COVID is identical to flu. And they know this, which is precisely why they just removed the word flu from the lexicon. Nobody seems to care either that flu just vanished. It just vanished like a magic trick.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
After I came home from Iraq, I could still hear the booms. Makes it hard to be a good mom.
As America's veterans face challenges, DAV is there.
I'm Naomi Mathis, Air Force veteran.
DAV helps veterans get the benefits they've earned.
Thanks to DAV, I was able to begin to heal.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
My victory is being able to be here for my children.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
People join Walk MS to raise awareness and funds that change the world for everyone affected by multiple sclerosis. Walk MS brings communities together, creating teams with friends, loved ones, and coworkers to rally around those we care about and end MS forever. Together, we can change the world for people with MS. Register today at walkms.org.
There's no dispute. The jabs are not safe or effective. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You know, we gotta keep banging the drum. We just gotta keep banging the drum. Sometimes it can get tiring. Sometimes you can feel like you're repeating yourself, and you are, but there's a lot of power also in repetition. You know, if you practice something, the same simple basic movement over and over again, it becomes, you know, ingrained in your muscle memory. And there's a lot of power in perseverance and focusing on a certain point. And that's what we're trying to do here. And certainly when I've been talking to Jonathan over the last few months, we've been centered in and around you know, the mechanics of these products and the damage that they can do and the rollout to certain people and the aftermath from that, amongst other things. Sadly, I think we'll have more to talk about on this. This isn't going away anywhere. The FDA have this week approved the Pfizer and Moderna products for, in, I believe, the case of Pfizer, 6 months to 4 years of age. In the case of Moderna, 6 months to 5 years of age. I might have got those the wrong way around. It matters not. Bottom line is both drugs manufacturers are being allowed to pimp their product to 6 month-old children up to 5 years or 4 years of age. Apparently, there was a board of advisors. They got together and they talked about this, and there was 24 advisors said yay and zero advisors said nay. Not even one dissenting voice, not even two. You know, to make it, if I was doing this, if I was a evil, wicked, demonic rat, I would say, okay, you know, let's make this look at least, you know, it was close. Let's do 24, you know, let's do 13 and 9, or let's do, you know, whatever it is. But they didn't. 24 and 0. Can you believe that?
Well, absolutely. It's just truly a shocking indictment of our regulators. And you know me, I don't hold our regulators anywhere in very high regard after all they've done. Yeah, I mean, I've actually got here 21 and 0 whitewash, you could say. So complete and total uniform vote. So unanimity with the decision to suggest approval. I think it has to technically jump through one or two hoops with the CDC and the FDA. But I think the states are looking by next Tuesday, as early as next Tuesday, to actually roll them out. I think Governor DeSantis of Florida is the only one who's basically saying we at state level will not order them. They may still get them in Florida. The doctors can probably get hold of them, but at state level. So there's one sort of, that's the only part of resistance that I've seen. I've certainly seen some pretty worrying things, which I can speak to in terms of what's in this document, which was released a few days ago. I mean, first thing, I mentioned this before, as you know, the discrepancy in terms of dosage. So Moderna's pediatric dose for 6 months to 5 years is 25 micrograms, which is 83% of Pfizer's full adult dose. Whereas Pfizer's pediatric dose for the age range is 3 micrograms. So there's more than an eightfold differential between the dosage. Now, it may be that Pfizer's vaccine, let's just say, is better encapsulated and breaks down less than, say, Moderna's. And that may be, you know, technically why they justify it. But still, having a discrepancy in the so-called active pharmaceutical ingredient, as we have, is, I would say, pretty unprecedented at this kind of age range. But when you actually go into the document, there are really two major problems that we have with this movement towards approval. I mean, the first thing is efficacy. Many people may not know this, but there was only what's called a descriptive analysis in the pediatric studies for even just prevention of symptomatic cases confirmed by a test, like a PCR test, NAAT test. What they actually do, the only efficacy study they did was in the main adult group, that 95%, which isn't all it's cracked up to be. And we know that now. I speak to that in my talk as well. What they use is a technique called immunobridging. They simply compare the antibodies of the children after their third dose of the pediatric formulation for Pfizer against a reference standard in that trial where they actually attained the efficacy, which was back in late 2020, against a completely different dominant strain. We're now in 2022 against Omicron. What they do is they use a reference strain to test how many neutralizing antibodies. But here's the question. When they're looking at these little children's blood and they're looking at the antibodies, are we interested in how well it stops the current virus or a reference strain from early 2020? I think most people would agree we care more about how it neutralizes, how it coats the virus protectively, the current Omicron strain. That's not what they do. The primary immunogenicity endpoints evaluated neutralizing antibody titers against USA WA1 2020 reference strain, a Wuhan-like strain. That was the initial wild-type virus from Wuhan. They have a very similar reference strain that they're using. That is what they're testing antibodies against. But when you go down, you look at table 18 in this document, which has just come out, you will see that when it comes to Omicron, the geometric mean titers, which is like the amount of these antibodies, it's like 5 or 6 times lower against Omicron than it was against the wild type strain. So it really doesn't tell you anything. And what's even more interesting, when you look at what the FDA have been saying about antibodies, there is a press release they made, or it's on their website, May 2021, they issued it. Antibody testing is not currently recommended to assess immunity after COVID-19 vaccination, FDA safety communication. FDA have had to come out and warn against inferring immunity from antibodies, even after vaccination. Why do they do this? Because they have to take away the argument for natural immunity. But when you go into all the pediatric studies for Pfizer, for example, immunobridging, comparing antibodies against an outdated strain, is the only way they could be confident enough to meet an endpoint. It's not efficacy. It's not. So all the risk for no reward.
You know, listening to you talking, and as you were talking, I was having flashbacks of the various, health officials that were rolled out onto the podiums a year ago, 2 years ago. And, you know, when it came to the vaccine, I remember Matt Hancock, who was the then health secretary in the UK, standing up in Parliament. And I think it was November 2020, just before the main vaccine rollout in the UK. He said, these products are absolutely not for use with children. Okay, so he stood there in November 2020. And then, of course, fast forward a year later to November 2021. And, of course, the age range has dropped from 75 vulnerable down to 60 to 50 to 40 to 30. And then they're going after teenagers. If you or I were under, had any doubts that the driving force behind this is just simple evil. You know, people say it's power, it's control, profit. It's not. It's evil. Okay, they're making enough money off the adults. They're making enough money off the vulnerable. They're making enough money off all of these other products that they're pushing out there. When you go after a child at 6 months of age, and dare I say, in the womb, because pregnant women are being advised to partake of this on the basis that it will protect them and their unborn child from any harm and so on. When you go after an unborn child, and you go after a newborn with these products, and you're lying through your teeth to get parents to take them. My friend, no one will convince me that that's about money or power or control. It is evil, pure and simple. It is pretty much child sacrifice, in my humble opinion. And it's coming from a spiritual background, and no one can convince me otherwise. When you go after the weakest, most vulnerable members of society, which are infants and babes in the womb, That transcends power and control of money, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And as I said, we know from careful reading of the documentation, there's no provable efficacy. There's a little trick that they use with antibodies, which contradicts the rest of their posturing against natural immunity. But when you go further and you look at the, not just the risks now, but even just the harm that's being caused. And remember, this is always an underreporting. I mean, believe it or not, the clinical trials, when we read the documentation, we're still not reading the raw data. Even when we see those files that Pfizer released through Freedom of Information Request, the SAS files, the PDF files, et cetera, that's underreporting, because Augusto Ruiz, Maddie de Garay's raw files are not accurate when you look at their medical records, when you look at what's being disclosed outside of it. It's almost like we have to go and get the 44,000 patients from Pfizer's adult trial, interview every single one, get all their medical records. If we did that, we'd have a true picture. So what I'm about to say is an underreporting of what happened in the 6-month to 5-year trial of Pfizer. But look, lymphadenopathy, swollen lymph nodes, which typically is indicative of, you know, having some kind of an infection, maybe having some kind of sequelae afterwards. 3 instances of lymphadenopathy in the treatment group, none in placebo. It's worth mentioning that the treatment group in the pediatric trials is twice as big as the placebo group. So you have to bear that in mind. Study withdrawals due to adverse events, 6 in the treatment group, 1 in the placebo group. Study withdrawals due to life-threatening fever, that's a fever over 40 degrees, 3 in the treatment group, and none disclosed in the placebo group. Severe COVID-19 in 2 to 4 year olds. So half the group look at the 2 to 4 year olds. 6 instances of severe COVID in the treatment group, 1 in the placebo group. So why is there more instances of severe COVID-19? And by the way, Professor Martin Neal has done some Bayesian analysis on this and finds a 78% probability that the treatment is causing, statistically at least, more severe COVID in the 2-year to 4-year age range. So we've just said that immunobridging we don't care about because it's a hack, it's a trick. Mm-hmm. They're doing it against early 2020 strain. That means nothing because it's extinguished, it's gone. They're literally testing against a strain that doesn't exist, that is not representative of the current strain. But when you look at the actual harm, there's more harm in the treatment group. And just even, there's even a case study here that they mention, and this will really bring it home. 6-month-old baby in the treatment group had a serious adverse event of seizure, eye rolling upward, that occurred 2 days after dose 2. Now, they do say preceded by symptoms of a respiratory tract infection, but provide no evidence of that. Even in the document, it says a febrile seizure related to vaccination cannot be definitely excluded based on available information. And they had a few episodes of eye rolling per day with resolution of symptoms 17 days after onset. Patient was withdrawn by parental consent. Now, that's what they've allowed us to see in the document. Huh. How many other things have they downplayed like they did to Maddie de Garay and Augusto Rue? Very concerning.
You know what? Even if there was no downplaying, even if they reported absolutely everything, in other words, if the facts that we had are the facts that you have to hand and the case numbers that you have to hand, if that was all there was, if that was actually genuine, full disclosure, that would still be more than enough, or should be more than enough, to have this pulled, scrapped, and anyone that's pushing it jailed for potentially attempted murder. So even the fact that it is underreported, which it is, the facts that we do have in and of themselves should be enough by a mile to have this halted. But yet, and this is what it doesn't confuse me because I know what's going on, but I am stunned that despite the overwhelming evidence there that shows that this is unnecessary and potentially dangerous, and the risk-reward profile of the cost-benefit analysis is skewed heavily towards not doing it, still they persist. And not just persist, but check out there was an NHS trust in Sheffield this week. They've actually deleted some of their tweets where they were actively talking about people going out and getting this, and you've nothing to worry about and you won't get sick and it'll protect you, and pregnant women were targeted. The backlash against some of those tweets, in fact, if you check them out just for your own research purposes, because this gives you a handle of what's actually going out there. If you look up on Twitter and you go to NHS Sheffield at NHS Sheffield CCG, You look at that. If you want a misinformation, disinformation, death fest information, check out NHS at NHS Sheffield CCG. You will be stunned, my friend. You will be stunned. They're so bad they've been deleting their own tweets because of backlash. Think about that. An NHS trust deleting their tweets because of loonies like us. Loonies like us have caused the NHS to delete their tweets. Come on, people. There's no smoke without fire. Surely they're going to wake up and see that sooner.
That's the final kick in the teeth, is the mismarketing, which is exactly what our conference was addressing, basically, is the role of the media in it. As I always say, if you were to just give people the raw facts, the scores on the doors in terms of how much damage was done, in terms of what the study does and doesn't tell, what was skipped, the risks in the literature, the risks that the FDA understand very well about gene therapies and genetic vaccines, people would have a completely different behavior when it comes to it. They would make different decisions. This aspect of mismarketing, which is really the subject of my talk, is absolutely key. And it's really the worst bit that's going to happen now. With these pediatric vaccines, you will see them completely mismarketed. They will not talk about immunobridging. They will not talk about the fact that harm was done in the treatment group. They will not talk about the fact that there's all these unknown safety risks. And we say unknown, but the truth is we already have enough understanding. We have enough in vivo studies. We have enough blood tests that have been done. We see enough changes in terms of clots, fibrous structures, subclinical damage, clinical damage, case reports from the clinical trials. They know full well what's going on. Damage will be done to these small children. And I agree with you, it should be immediately stopped.
Just say no. Just say no. If not for your own sake, if you want to do it as an adult, you know, if that's what floats your boat. But please, when it comes to your kids, there's no greater responsibility as a parent than to keep your kids happy. Jonathan Weissman, we're out of time. Check out his website, healthandtruth.org. He'll be uploading content later at All the Risks on Twitter, alltherisks.com on the internet, the general internet. Jonathan, thank you, sir, for your time. As always, very concise, very informative. Hopefully, we'll see you again in a few weeks' time. Listeners, we'll be back after the break with more magic from Houston and Texas, the Lone Star State, on TNT Radio.